This is SB Nation Radio.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
The next generation of sports radio. This is the Tony D Show.
Guys, I'm bringing the party to you.
Live from the Quicken Loans Studios in New Jersey.
Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today.
Here's Tony Desiri.
SB Nation Radio, it's hour one here at Tony D Radio Show. Thanks for joining us. Telephone number 800-777-2907. NFL, do we have an elite team? Do we have a team that we now all are looking up to? I don't know if we do yet. I mean, it might be New England. But man, a lot of this sort of comeback to earth feeling yesterday in the National Football League. Last night was a terrible football game. We'll get to that in a minute. But you know, the funny thing about these games now, and I started noticing this trend, about a month and a half ago, when the news about the ratings and the NFL's decline really started to pop up, is that you would see these games on a Thursday night or a Sunday night or these Monday night games, and they wouldn't be very good and they wouldn't be very entertaining, or the outcomes would be off, or something was a matter with them. And then the immediate focus wasn't on, hey, we just got a bad game between two teams we thought it was going to be good. The shift now goes to, is this a larger story of the National Football League? Is this a larger angle of the decline of this iconic American sports institution? I don't think we have to go that extreme. I don't think it's that slippery slope. Last night should have been a good football game. It should have been wildly entertaining. The Seahawks are got a good defense. It looks like things offensively were coming together for them. Arizona kind of really did need this win, and it ended up being a 6-6 tie. Sometimes you end up with awfulness. That's what happens in sports. You can't guarantee anything. So, but before we get to that, and we're going to do quick hits around the NFL, I want to get to Saturday night, because one of the things that still, you know, even as I've gotten older and I still love covering sports and I still love watching sports, I love seeing things I don't get to see all the time. And I like seeing things that I've never seen all the time. It's one of the reasons I love college football, because every now and then a magical moment can happen in college football where you can see an Appalachian State beat a Michigan, and then you really process that later and go, wow, I've never seen anything like that. Or Alabama falls to a team in the SEC that came out of nowhere. It doesn't happen very often. You might see it once or twice your entire life, but that's what makes me keep coming back for more. I don't like the predictability of it. I like the fact that some nights you just sit back and go, this is crazy. So going into Saturday's Game 6 in the National League Championship Series, I was really hoping for some sort of closure on this series, because I wanted to see the Cubs win and go to the World Series and see what it would be like, as again, a non-Cubs fan, somebody not invested in the team and the misery, but to see something I've never seen. In fact, most of us have never seen. You have to be 71 to have been born at the time, the last time they went to the World Series. Probably about 80, 82 to really sort of remember it. And it's been that long. So last night, Saturday night, I should say, I'm watching Game 6. And you watch Clayton Kershaw. Now, this is me going, look, I think this could be a Clayton Kershaw night. Then we go to Game 7. Anything can happen. The pressure is going to be up for the Cubs. This could be trouble. I don't know. This would make me uneasy. I never want to go to a Game 7 of anything. The only reason I would want to go to a Game 7 if I was down 3-1 or I was down 3-2. And the only way to win it would be to go to a Game 7. So I can only imagine sort of that tightening of, all right, let's see what this weekend is going to entail, because if we lose to Kershaw, who knows how Game 7 will be pointed out. Kershaw clearly early in this game doesn't really have it. He's getting hit. There's runs coming across. But at the same time, you're sort of cautious, right? You don't want to jump on the whole, hey, this is in the bag now. They got to Kershaw. You just don't know when something may strike up again. You know, you don't know when Steve Bartman's going to lean over and knock the ball and take a ball out of a potential out for Moises Alou. You just don't know when it's going to come. Is there going to be an error that leads to a 10-run Dodger inning? You're just not sure. But I'll be honest with you. And I know maybe Joe felt differently because he's a Cubs fan. Maybe Cubs fan felt differently. There was a moment late in the game where I thought, this is just a matter of time. That there is nothing the Dodgers are going to be able to do in this game. This is going to be the Cubs' night. I don't know when I felt it, but I just felt like there's more control here than I've seen. And I haven't seen the Cubs on the brink. I think it's two times in my lifetime I've seen the Cubs on the brink of going to the World Series. 1984 with the game against the series against San Diego, and in 2003. So it's not like we've seen it time and time again and them failing to deliver. We've seen them in the postseason, but we haven't seen them on the cusp. We very rarely have seen them on this. But there was a moment where I thought this was going to be closed out. So the game-ending double play occurs. And I'm sitting with my daughter at home, and we're watching it on TV. Now, I was supposed to go to an amusement park with my son, but those plans got canceled, so I ended up watching the game with my daughter. Now, here's the cool thing. My daughter loves sports, but she's 11, and she doesn't understand a lot of the stuff, or she doesn't have the history of a lot of stuff. So I tried to explain this to her, and it was neat because I was telling her, I was like, you know, Grandpa, he's never been alive to see this. This has been a long time. Like, if you remember those stories of what it was like in the 40s, that's the last time. So I was trying to convey the largeness of what we were about to see. And she's kind of into it now. She's thinking to herself, okay, Dad's done a pretty good job of laying this out. Ground ball, double play. Game's over. Stadium erupts. And I'm going to tell you something. These are the moments that keep us coming back. That to me was a moment that makes me keep coming back. I can get cynical all the time, and Lord knows I've done this for a long time. I have gotten cynical on a lot of things. I roll my eyes at some of the poetic nature of sports and what it does, right? But I've always held to the belief, and this is something I want to share with you, because a lot of us have friends who don't get this. A lot of us have friends that don't get why we're invested in this. You know, if you had a space alien and he came down and he wanted to know about culture, right, in the United States, and he witnessed some sort of athletic activity going on in a stadium with people and wanted to know why this was very important to people's lives, it's very difficult to explain to them why it is, right? It's not life or death. It doesn't enhance your life financially unless you gamble on the side. But overall, it's entertainment to another level. Right, you go to the movies, you get entertained, you leave. This is different. It creeps into the fabric of who we are. This is the thing about sports that I love. Look at the city of Chicago on Saturday night. Look at it and see it. Feel it. Everybody, young, old, black, white, everybody's coming together to celebrate this. As a community, and people across the country are sharing moments with people across the world because this was extremely valuable. They had never seen it. Most people had never seen it. They waited their whole lives to see one moment. And in the process, and this was the other thing that I was trying to convey to my daughter, in the process, they watched an expansion team like Miami get two championships. They watched the World Series being played at Coors Field in Denver. They've seen franchises come and go. They have seen new teams. And in the whole time that this is existing, presidents have come and gone. The whole time, this whole period of time, the one thing that they can't say is that they've seen their Cubs participate in a game for the World Series. 1945 up. Man went to the moon and got bored with that in the amount of time it took between World Series appearances, let alone winning it. That's a whole other conversation. And this moment, Saturday night, I'm sitting there going, I'm not even a Cubs fan. I'm not going to pretend to be. I'm not going to pretend like I'm all, but I loved seeing it. I loved it. At the same time that that's going on, Penn State's beating Ohio State to throw a little monkey wrench into the college football playoff. Just a little bit. But Saturday night, that night belonged to the Cubs. Because even if you don't like the Cubs, even if for some reason you just go, no, that you don't even have to be a Dodger fan. You can just hate the whole thing. There's no denying that what you saw, this was so historic, it's unlike anything else. Again, you have to go back to like 2004 with the Red Sox winning the World Series. And look, the Cubs aren't done yet. But here's the thing that Red Sox fans, this is what makes those two groups who are dealing with these curses, this is what makes this different. You talk to old-time Red Sox fans, the guys who remember what life like was before 2004, And they'll tell you about the World Series of 67. They'll tell you about the problems of the 75 series against the Reds. They'll certainly break down all the problems John McNamara had in his defensive ill substitutions in Game 6 of the 1986 World Series. There are World Series moments for the Red Sox that they can point to and say, the curse could have been lifted there and there and there. From 1945 until Saturday night, there exists no conversation from people to say, yeah, if the Cubs had only substituted this guy in the 1951 World Series. No, none of it. That's why Saturday was awesome. NFL Quick Hits, we're going to do that next, coming up on what we saw Sunday around this crazy league. I'm Tony D, ESPN Nation Radio.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony DeZiri.
All right, coming up at the bottom of the hour, Cheryl Ray Stout will join us, WBEZ in Chicago. Tell me about her a little bit, because she's broken a lot of Chicago stories to help us with the Cubs.
Yeah, she broke back in the day of Michael Jordan going to play the White playing for the White Sox.
Oh, nice.
Or that he was going to try out. She was one of my professors in college, and then there's this really cool story that Yahoo did back in the day on her. I guess it was like 3 years ago, about how Jim Harbaugh freaked out on the Bears PR staff when they wouldn't let Cheryl in the locker room, because at the time women weren't allowed in the locker room after practices.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
And Jim Harbaugh freaked out and like made the Bears change their policies so Cheryl could go in the locker room. So she's been covering Chicago sports forever.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I don't want to get to how long ago that was, but that was a while ago.
It's like 80, probably like 87.
Yeah, 87. So good. We'll have her on to talk about the Cubs and their victory in the World Series and the fan base and all the good little storylines that go along with that. All right, so quick hits from the National Football League on Sunday. And I said at the top of the hour, you know, did we see or did we get a feeling like, okay, we're now here where some of the top teams, the kind of that tier 1A, if you will, have kind of come down to earth a little bit after the Minnesota Vikings loss. Patriots were good. They weren't great against the Steelers. I'll have more thoughts on that game coming up. But the day started in London, and I like waking up to games like this. I like waking up to games in London. But when you're talking about the matchups that have gone overseas, for the most part, the last couple have been really bad. The Giants intercepted Case Keenum 4 times. They beat the Rams 17-10. Now, Jeff Fisher at the end of the game says he's going to stick with Case Keenum because Jared Goff's not ready. How badly do you have to be from a Jared Goff standpoint if you can't replace a guy that threw 4 picks? And now Londoners know what we've known or should have known this whole time. The Rams stink. They're terrible. Londoners are like, oh, we only needed one game to determine that. We were kind of like, oh, the Rams, should we buy them? Their offense isn't very good, but defensively they're good. We sort of played around with the Rams early this season, but they're terrible. The Giants aren't really all that much better, but they did beat the Rams in London, so everybody got to go overseas and play a football game for the light of Great Britain. The Jets beat Baltimore 24-16. The only reason I bring this up is because Ryan Fitzpatrick got his job back. Geno Smith got hurt. Fitzpatrick came in. They beat the Ravens. It's only their second win. But at the end of the game, Ryan Fitzpatrick says, when the coach doesn't believe in you, when the GM doesn't believe in you, the only one that can believe in you is you. Good job, because you don't have support at all from that organization, despite the fact that you picked up your second win of the season. Ravens, by the way, have now lost 4 straight. Kansas City over the Saints. This is a boring game. It's like 27-21, but that's what the way Kansas City does it. Another good, efficient game from Alex Smith, right? Just pedestrian stats, but that's okay. That's what they do. Drew Brees throws 3 touchdowns. Defense can't do anything. And he also threw a pick six. So that was the day for Drew Brees. Indianapolis over Tennessee and Nashville 34-26. Titans missed their chance on this one. They were 3-3 coming into this game. The Colts are kind of reeling. They were 2-4. It's a home game. Tennessee has played pretty well. Not great, but pretty well. Better than they have over the last couple of years. Well, the Colts are missing just about everybody, and they don't have anything but Andrew Luck. Well, now they got T.Y. Hilton back because he had a fantastic game. Tennessee led this one 23-20. They gave up a touchdown. Then Marcus Mariota had a fumble late that was returned for a score by Robert Mathis. Indy wins this, and the Titans are back to 3-4. Had they won this game, I'm telling you, there would be room on the bandwagon if you wanted to jump on a little bit. But now, forget it. It's shut down. It's closed. Philadelphia over Minnesota. Most important game for the Eagles. good bounce back defensively. This wasn't Carson Wentz per se, although he did struggle early and got better in this game. They beat the Minnesota Vikings, who were 5-0 coming in, 21-10. And they did it because Jim Schwartz, who saw a lot of defensive lapses in last week's game against Detroit, he fixed a lot of this stuff. And now the Eagles went out and pressured Bradford. My question, though, was, why did the fans boo Sam Bradford? I know fans boo. Tonight, you'll see it in Denver. They'll boo Brock Osweiler, because even though he gave them four victories, including an important game against New England during the regular season. Fans just boo. There doesn't necessarily have to be a rhyme or reason. But Bradford did not leave the Eagles. Bradford was traded from the Eagles. Carson Wentz exists now in Philadelphia because Sam Bradford was traded from the Eagles. He did nothing wrong. He came back. They booed him. They would have cheered him if he had started. He played pretty good late last season. There wasn't a lot of overconfidence that the Eagles would do good, but there certainly wasn't doom and gloom. He showed a lot of bright signs late last year. But you know what? He used to be an Eagle. Now he's not, so I guess that's why he booed. Cincinnati over Cleveland, 31-17. Only one reason I'm bringing this up is because Hugh Jackson looks like he's quitting now. Oh, that was quick. Hugh Jackson, who I liked, who I think should get a head coaching job, is now gave up play-calling duties and just rolling over this team. The Browns are awful. We know they're awful. But when your head coach now is like, how awful can it be? I can't do this. Then you're in a mess. Thank God the Cavs have won the championship. The Indians are in the World Series. The Browns are still an important part of Cleveland culture, but now you can ignore them. Detroit over Washington, 20-17. Lions are 4-3. Matt Stafford playing pretty good right now. Hit Anquan Boldin with 16 seconds left for the go-ahead touchdown. Kirk Cousins was pretty good, too. 301 yards, had a touchdown, but Detroit now is winning some games. I didn't think they would. I thought they were terrible. I thought losing Calvin Johnson would hurt them, but now they're 4-3. And then 4-3 at this point in this league is pretty good. Oakland over Jacksonville. The Raiders converted a 4th-and-24 on a fake punt. Let me repeat that. A 4th-and-24 on a fake punt. Now, I was watching this game on the red zone. At one point, Scott Hansen says, and that should do it for ... And what he said was, should close out the game with a win. I thought he was going to say that should do it for Gus Bradley's head coaching career. I was really hoping he would say that. A 4th-and-24 and a fake punt. Are we even playing professional football in Jacksonville? What's going on there? It was like, seriously, you know what it reminded me of if you watch that play? You never played electric football when you were a kid. Now, for those old, if you're old enough to remember, you probably do. Well, you took these figures and you kind of dialed on this metal field, and then you turned on and it would vibrate and the players would go in one direction. That's what it looked like. Jacksonville's players literally were all dialed to all go to the right. Like, start up the electric football. They're all just, and meanwhile, the punter is like, hey, I'll just saunter down the field 24 yards to pick up the first down, since nobody's bothering to cover that side of the field. Gus Bradley, I supported you, now I can't. Miami over Buffalo, that ends the four-game win streak for the Bills. Jay Ajayi, another 200-yard game. That's great for him. I barely knew he existed, and now he's rushed for 200 yards in back-to-back games. San Diego over Atlanta, huge win for the Chargers at the Georgia Dome. Huge win. San Diego, single-digit wins, fourth-quarter meltdowns. You could say it all as they struggled at the beginning of the season. But they were a good team. How? I have no idea. But they were a good team that just couldn't quite close out games. Now they've beaten Denver, and now they went to Atlanta and got a big win against the Falcons. Kept the Falcons to 3 points in the second half. No one's been able to do that. San Diego, again, with the big win in Atlanta. New England over Pittsburgh. Okay. The Pats have used three quarterbacks this season. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett, and Tom Brady. 7 games. They're now 6-1. All three quarterbacks, none of them have thrown a pick. None of them have thrown a pick this season. Pittsburgh's Landry Jones was good. Great? No. Adequate replacement for Ben Roethlisberger? Not really. But they went down the field enough. They managed over 350 yards of offense in this game. They couldn't put it in the end zone. And they missed two key field goals. They didn't take chances. They played it too safe. When you have a backup quarterback, you don't have anything to lose. Nobody was dialing in thinking you were going to beat the New England Patriots and Tom Brady with a backup quarterback. When you have chances, take it. This is one of the frustrating things about Mike Tomlin. So what did we learn? No one's elite. Maybe the Patriots, but no one has gotten to that elite level yet. Maybe this is good for the NFL. But with Minnesota coming back down a little bit, I think it opens up the league a little bit more. All right, let's talk Chicago and the Cubs. Cheryl Ray Stout will join us, WBEZ in Chicago. We'll get the latest from the series and what happened on Saturday night next. Tony D, SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation Radio.
The next generation of sports radio.
The handoff by Hoynes to George in a foot race, and he gets away. George is gone. Eddie George putting up more Heisman Trophy numbers.
This is Eddie George, former football player, and you're listening to SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to SB Nation Radio. This is the Tony D Show.
Well, I said Saturday night, it was really neat to see something that I haven't seen in my lifetime. Most people haven't seen in their lifetime. The Cubs win the National League pennant, and they're now four wins away from the World Series, something I haven't won since 1908. Cheryl Ray Stout joins us, WBEZ in Chicago. Sort of put in perspective what we saw on Saturday. How are you, Cheryl?
I'm doing well. It was very historic. I've been covering games there for over 30 years. I was a fan there many, many years before that. And never seen a clinch for a National League title. So it was really exciting. The streets around Wrigley were filled with people that could not get tickets but wanted to celebrate. The team celebrated on the field, in the clubhouse, back on the field again. And as I left around, well, about 12:30 in the morning, the fans were still driving into Wrigleyville. So we were talking about a party that probably went to like 6 a.m. in the morning.
In terms, and it's been hard for me to sort of come up with this question, because it's on the one hand, yeah, they haven't won and it's a big celebration, but I'm trying to get at the fabric of the city and this team and how it intertwines. So in that perspective, what did Saturday mean?
Well, you have to understand that both parks in Chicago, it's the only city that has two ballparks in the city proper. There's the L is right, it runs right through it. It's in a neighborhood that, you know, you walk across the street and that's where people live. You walk another street, that's where the bars are at. You take a bus there. There's a high school right down the street. So it's a neighborhood, and that's why it lives and breathes almost human-like. And that's the way Chicago is. And Chicago is a different big city compared to New York and L.A. We are involved with our teams. We are involved with our communities, and that's why the Cubs resonate so much.
I have a lot of friends who are Cubs fans, and when I ask them about their background, I say, did you live in Chicago? Did you grow up? And they say, no, but I lived in an area that didn't have baseball, and they were always on TV, like WGN.
Right.
So
right.
Do you see that where people are like, oh, I've been to Chicago maybe twice, but I've always been a Cubs fan?
Yeah, a lot, especially people in Iowa. They always make big bus, you know, trips to Chicago. I grew up in the city. I grew up on the west side of Chicago. My grandfather drove a coal truck to Wrigley Field and Comiskey Park, and he was the one that used to dig the coal out of the truck and put it into the, you know, the fires there. So it's in my blood, you know, baseball and the Cubs. But for people outside, the thing is, even when the Cubs are bad, and it happens more than not, Tony, there would be buses from different cities. That was like one of the top tourist attractions for people outside of Chicago.
All right, so I grew up in New England, so I was all familiar with the Red Sox and the curse. But one of the things that people, you know, the Red Sox fans always had were World Series that they could pinpoint to say, well, we blew it in 67, and we didn't win it in 75, and we didn't win it in 86. For Cubs fans, this is one step, and obviously they want to win the title, but right now is, and I hate to ask this because I don't want to sound like I'm just kind of dismissing a championship and what it would mean, but right now is it good enough? Because there is no history of a World Series.
Oh, well, the history last time was 1945, and that's when the goat wasn't allowed in, and that's why the curse was put over the Cubs. It's because they have been going in this direction, Tony. 5 years ago, when Tom Ricketts bought the team, what did he do? He got Phil Epstein from Boston, which thank you very much.
Yeah.
So he comes in, and he was given the keys to the car. He was allowed to make changes with his team that you can't do in big cities usually. He was able to gut it. He was able to rebuild it. And so they've been heading in this direction for 5 years. And last year was not a fluke. For those of us that have been, I was there during the 100 losses. I know what it was like. And I saw what they were doing. And you could see the blueprint was there. And they were building for this. And now they just want to make sure they put the top on the house with a World Series win.
How important is Joe Madden? Because I guess you would have to have the right guy to sort of say, look, I got to be able to shield my team from some of the pressure that other teams don't get this time of year.
Talk about dumb luck or the best luck. When he became available when Tampa Bay, when Andy Freeman went to L.A., there was Joe Madden for the taking, and he had an opt-out on his contract, and he took it, and Theo Epstein went down there. They sat in his trailer, or actually it's his RV. They sat in his RV, and they discussed it, and he came, and he has changed the way we watch managers take off the pressure. When things are a little tough, he brings in, animals. He has shirts made up, try not to suck. he has great phrases for these guys. Embrace the target was what they said at the beginning of the year. In other words, do not worry about what people are saying. You are good enough. You know you're good. Enjoy it. Relish it. You are what you are. And that's why they are succeeding, because he pushes the right buttons. He does not give lectures. In fact, he said there was only three times a year he gives, talks, beginning of the season, all-star break, and beginning of the postseason. And that's it. So he knows how to handle this team very well. He's got some interesting situations. He's got Jason Hayward, who's struggling in right field. What did he do in game six? He put in Albert Almora Jr., a rookie. He is not afraid to make those decisions, but these players know that he's doing it for their best interest.
Cheryl Ray Stout joins us, WBEZ in Chicago, on the Cubs, who won Saturday night to clinch the National League pennant. All right, so take me back to game four. So they have these two games where they're not hitting at all. Right?
Right.
They're both shut out, and it's game four. You talk about adjustments. You talk about managers. What does Joe Madden do in game to go into game four?
He doesn't do a lot, but the thing was, when they're still being shut out, is Ben Zobrist, the guy that they signed as a free agent who was with Joe Madden down in Tampa Bay. What does he do on his own? He gets a bunt single, and it just opened up the whole can of worms for them to get their offense going. This team has a good mixture of veterans, and it has rookies, and it has first-year players, and Joe knows how to put them in the right spot, and that's what he did.
The team, the city of Chicago has the White Sox, and there's a fan base there. Do they enjoy this, or is there a lot of animosity between the two? How does that work in the city of Chicago?
Well, when you live in Chicago, you know exactly how it works. If you're from the South Side, you stay in the South Side pretty much with the White Sox. The younger fans, White Sox fans, are being gracious about it. The ones that have got their boots on the ground and, drawn that line, they're not changing. They're rooting for the Indians. Okay. It's always crazy like that. In 2005, the White Sox were able to beat the Houston Astros, and I don't hear a lot of Cub fans saying hooray for them. So fair play.
All right, so give me an idea from the series. How do you grade this series? Is there what troubles Cubs fans about what the Indians do? I'm sure that people they're still partying, so I'm not sure there's a lot of analysis going on. But what troubles them about the Indians?
Well, there's a couple of factors. First off, we all know that Andrew Miller, he's the anchor for that great bullpen. You've got to get past the Cleveland Indians starters and score early and score a lot. Otherwise, you're going to have the fate of be put in those guys' hands. The other thing is their base running. The Indians can steal bases. They had 143 stolen bases this year, the most in the American League. And if there's one Achilles heel to John Lester, it's that. Runners on base. He has trouble with a bunch, trying to throw to first. He still has that issue. But he's been brilliant. The Dodgers try to do the same thing to him by, giving him a hard time when they're on bases, and he didn't flinch. So those are the two areas that has to be the biggest concern. And they don't have home field advantage. But I think maybe the home field advantage may not be a big deal for the Cubs, because I think it would be better for them starting on the road because they don't have that pressure at home like they would on the road, you know, being on the road.
Cheryl, this has been great. Thank you so much for your time, and I really appreciate it, and I hope we get to talk to you again.
No problem, Tony.
You got Cheryl Ray Stout, WBEZ in Chicago on the Cubs. Again, Saturday night, clinching the National League for the first time since 1945, going for their first World Series title since 1908. I kind of made a joke on Twitter Saturday night. I said, you know, the last time the Indians were in the World Series, the Indians, was in 1997. Bill Clinton was president. The last time the Cubs were in the World Series, Bill Clinton hadn't even been born. That's how long ago it was. I mean, it's just unfathomable to see a team like that has that kind of long history. Like, look, a lot of teams can't say they haven't won a World Series since 1908 because a lot of them haven't existed since 1908, let alone 1945. And for Cubs fans every year to go, oh, Miami gets to celebrate this? Oh, the Rockies are hosting World Series games? Toronto has a couple of... Really? Toronto has a World Series? Must drove them nuts. Just absolutely nuts. And now they're in the World Series. The big story. Coming up next, did you find one college football game a little disturbing? I'll ask that question next on SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation Radio.
Get all your college football coverage right here on SB Nation Radio.
McSorley takes it. There's the knee. The Nittany Lions have done it. They have knocked off second-ranked Ohio State in Beaver Stadium.
You can always find us on the go on SBNationRadio.com. This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony DeZiri.
All right, our thanks to Cheryl Ray Stout out in Chicago on the Cubs. That was really good. Joe George made a very good point, and I think it's a poignant point about the World Series. We were talking about things that have changed since 1945, the last time the Cubs were in the World Series, and I kind of made the side joke that, you know, Clinton was president when the Indians were last in, and he wasn't even born the last time the Cubs were in, but I think your point was better than that.
Yeah, I saw it on Twitter, and I saw Dexter Fowler react to it, and that's how it kind of stuck out to me. And my first, when I first saw it, was that the last time the Cubs were in the World Series, Dexter Fowler, when he wouldn't have been able to even play.
That's right.
So when he leads off for the Cubs to start the game tomorrow night, he'll be the first black player to ever play for the Cubs in the World Series.
That's amazing. It is amazing. Again, the long history of that franchise. It's one thing when you're an expansion team and you go 20 years without being in it. I get it. But when you've been around over 100 years and you have zilch for memories, like zilch for World Series. I'm like, I'm sure, I don't know, there's a couple of 90-year-olds out there that probably remember when the Cubs were in the World Series. But for most people, like, never seen this before. Never. Ever. Like, I mean, it's just, I couldn't even begin to fathom the kind of level of just what kind of team is this? What kind of team am I rooting for in this? So I told you Saturday I got to watch the game with my daughter. And the reason I got to watch the game was I was supposed to take my son and his friend to an amusement park on Saturday night for like a Halloween festival. But in his football game Saturday morning, his freshman football game, my son, the worst nightmare as a football parent, my son got a concussion. A bad concussion. And it's so wild because I talk about CTE and I talk about concussions a lot, about the league and what the league's doing and all that stuff. And when my son wanted to play freshman football, you know it's a danger, but you never think like it's going to, you know, you don't think it's going to be a big deal or it's going to happen. He was blocking on a play. He was playing defensive end. And then the other team went out to punt and he was blocking a guy coming down the field. And then he turned his, and even admitted later, because I shouldn't have turned my back on the play. As he turned his back on the play, on the blocking, the kid hit him because he was going for a regular block. But by the time my son had turned the play, and the shoulder pad went into his chin strap, into his helmet, and he hit his head, and he fell down. And when my son got up, he went right back down to the ground. And it's just the scariest thing because he started to stagger up. As he staggered up, he went boom. Fell right back down. So the coaches ran out on the field. They grabbed him off the field, and he had to go through the test and the concussion protocol. The trainer wasn't going to let him back in the game, of course, and the coach actually had to have a meeting with me and my wife after the game to tell him all the things that they're going to have to do. So since Saturday night, he was a mess I mean, a mess. At first, he felt okay. Like, in the afternoon, he felt fine. By the time the night rolled around, he was a disaster. His head was pounding and the ears were ringing. So my wife took him to the doctor, and the doctor said, sure enough, he had a concussion, and these are the things you have to watch out for, and he's going to need some medicine for the sleep, for sleeping. So my wife, all the pharmacies were closed. All the pharmacies were closed on Saturday night in my area. All of them. In the surrounding towns, everything. So my wife went to another state to go find him the medicine. Like, literally drove out of state to find one. She called me up. She goes, yeah, I'm in Pennsylvania. We won't come home till late. I said, why are you in Pennsylvania? She goes, I got to go find the pharmacy. But it just reiterated to me, like, over and over again, how this is a – it didn't really hit me. I talk about concussions kind of on the periphery. Like, I don't really think about it, and youth sports and football and the culture of it. All of it was on the periphery because I've never experienced it. I didn't, you know, but now I've seen it firsthand. And I have to give credit here because, and this is one of the reasons I'm telling this story, because there are some families and adults in my cheering section, if you will. All of us are parents and we all cheer for the same team. And I got a lot of guys who, you know, they want their kids to be rough and tough and hit and hard and all that good stuff. And it's football. So that's the nature of it. But I think about how lucky my kid is in 2016 that when he got up and went right back down and that the coaches went out and the trainer went out and there is now a whole list of things rather than give him some smelling salts and send him back in the game. Like, to 2016, and it's probably going to get better as we progress. It's better today because I do not know what would have happened to him 20 years ago. Like, if he was around 15 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago. But the coach who came up to me and my wife said, we're just literally laying out the procedure of the school. This is now what's going to take place. And he's going to be out of practice. And now he's going to be tested. And then on Tuesday, we're going to do this. And on Wednesday, we're going to do this. I mean, it is a by the book thing that I wonder, just wondering if it existed 20 years ago, 15 years ago. So it was really eye opening to me. And again, he's home from school and we're gonna be taking him in this week and all that stuff. But it was for a guy that does this for a living to have watched it and talked about it with Cam Newton and what went on in the NFL and what the NFL has to do and concussions and how dangerous they are and whatnot. And listen, I'm not here to kill football because I love it. And my son still loves it. And he just feels unfortunate that he got caught up in a bad hit. But it's good to see that we are a little bit more aware, and there's nothing wrong with it. I don't think it makes you less tough. I don't think it takes you to, you know, takes you in another place, if you will, in terms of your manhood, because we're taking these kind of precautions. So I always said, I tell them all the time, it's like, your future is not going to be playing football somewhere. You're supposed to be an academic individual. So this is what I'm trying to protect. But it was really eye-opening, again, for a guy that covers sports for a living. All right, coming up in the next hour, I want to get into Oklahoma and Texas Tech. Because as I was watching the Cubs on Saturday night, there were a lot of other college football games that were being played. And I was following along, and I watched Penn State and James Franklin beat Ohio State. But then something interesting was going on in Lubbock between Oklahoma, ranked 16th in the country, and Texas Tech. And you probably have gotten the idea that before this game occurred, this would be an offensive fireworks display. Right, Oklahoma and the Lincoln Riley air attack offense. Texas Tech, that is all they do with Patrick Mahomes, is just bomb, bomb, bomb away. The numbers coming out of this game were staggering. I don't think these two could have played a basketball game with as many points that were scored in the football game. But I'm going to ask, coming up in hour number two, is it disturbing as a sports fan to see something like we saw in Lubbock? And I'll actually tell you why it is coming up next. We'll also talk more about the NFL with Adam Stites from SB Nation. All coming up in hour two. I'm Tony D, SB Nation Radio.